great, another political talk show. Just what America needs. It's time for something different. I figure if you're listening to me, you are obviously a person of very high intellect.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Don't shoot the messenger. With your host, Kathy Wynn.
Hi, welcome to Don't Shoot the Messenger on Jackalope Radio, www.jackaloperadio.com. Each week here on Don't Shoot the Messenger, we talk about political issues and hot topics. And today's show, we are going to discuss the subject of freedom of religion in the United States. That is the First Amendment right of each and every American to worship or not in whatever way we choose. The guarantee of that right is one little line in the First Amendment of the Constitution. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. But boy, what controversy and conflict that one little line has created. So today on our show, we have Barry Lynn, Executive Director of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. And I hope you'll join us for this show. Welcome to the show, Barry.
Americans United was founded 62 years ago by a lot of people in the business of religion themselves, and some journalists and some others, who decided that it was terribly important at that time, and it continues to be important today, to keep a good, clear distance between the institutions of government and those of religion. And ironically, that helps both institutions. Governments don't have to essentially get into the theology business and decide what religion is right and which one is wrong. And on the other hand, religious groups are able to follow their own path, not to have government unnecessarily try to monitor or regulate what they do. So, frankly, in this country, the only place that has as clear and crisp a separation of church and state as anywhere in the world, we've done a pretty good job of maintaining a wall of separation and preserving the integrity of the church and, more or less, the integrity of religion.
Right. So it's kind of ironic, isn't it, that some of the groups who might be pushing hardest for encroaching, for having religion encroach into government, they actually might be the groups who are best protected by respecting that line.
Yeah, absolutely. This is something that ought to transcend Republican and Democrat and conservative and liberal. Yeah. Every American ought to understand that this is probably the greatest single contribution to world thinking that the United States has made. To keep a distance between government and religious institutions does benefit both. And of course, we've got in Americans United about 75,000 members around the country, 50 chapters around the country, and some of those folks are very conservative about many issues and are proud to say this they see as a conservative issue as well. And progressives and humanists and others who don't have any particular religious leaning understand that in order to preserve the rights of everyone, to make nobody, religious or otherwise, a second-class citizen in this country, means we have to maintain a wall of separation, which people are trying to chip away at on an almost daily basis.
Right, right. Well, Barry, I would like to ask you about just the part of the phrase in the First Amendment that I think probably gives a lot of people the most trouble and there might be the most confusion over, and that is Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion. I think we all understand what it means, that there should be no, that government prohibits or government doesn't prohibit the expression of religion, but Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion. I think that's where a lot of the problem comes in, don't you?
Yeah, it is. It's misunderstood, and people say, well, that is, we wonder what that means. Is it hostility to religion? Of course it's not. But when Congress shall make no law respecting, that means touching upon an establishment. I know you shouldn't correct the host, but it's an establishment. And the reason that's important is it's not just to say the government of the United States can't decide that Episcopalianism is the national religion. It's much broader than that. And in fact, one of the early constructions of the First Amendment simply said Congress shall not establish a national religion. But the framers of the Constitution, people like James Madison in that first Congress that was debating the Bill of Rights, said, look, that's not enough. It's too narrow. We want the government to be out of the religion business, period. And that was, of course, what most of the framers of the Constitution thought. Some were not as clear, but the separationist side won the debate. I'm glad they did, and I wish people would acknowledge that when we debate some of these current controversies.
What about the people who insist that America is a Christian country and give examples of places in the Declaration of Independence where a creator is referenced? Yep. Or the name of God invoked? Do they have any constitutional basis for believing that it isn't a violation of separation of church and state to allow, for example, school prayer or putting a creche in on the lawn of a government building?
Well, certainly not from the Declaration of Independence. You don't even cite the Declaration of Independence as in a legal brief. It is an important and formative document, but it is not a political document. You have to look to the Constitution to find out what the framers of the country really wanted the laws to recognize and to represent. Constitution says two things: no religious test for public office. That's in the so-called original Constitution. And then the Bill of Rights: Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. As far as the references in the Declaration of Independence, they were there about God, nature's God, for example, a phrase that is in a lot of dispute. It doesn't have much meaning today. But at the time that Jefferson was creating this Declaration of Independence, he did want to make it clear that a lot of Americans were not atheists. Atheism was sweeping through Europe at the time. He wanted to recognize that there was a diversity of religious and non-religious opinion in the country, and that's why he put in phrases like that to make people feel, frankly, more comfortable about this, after all, declaring independence from the country you've been a part of for a very long time.
Right. Well, I want to ask you just some specific questions about different issues that have come up in the last 8 or 10 years under the Bush administration.
Sure.
And now the Obama administration. Just with specifics that go right to the heart of our separation of church and state principles. And one of those is the faith-based initiatives that came about under the Bush administration, which allowed religious charitable organizations to provide housing, food, and counseling services to the poor. And under the Bush administration, those faith-based initiatives were considered to be a very good thing for America. Let's allow these charitable organizations, even though they come under the religious cloak, if they're providing food, if they're helping people survive, what's wrong with that? Why can't the government help those organizations out a little bit with funding and grants that we do to a lot of organizations that provide charity?
Yeah, that was the argument that the Bush people made, and unfortunately it was only a part of the story. First of all, a lot of religiously affiliated organizations were getting a huge amount of tax dollars anyway, long before President Bush started his faith-based initiative, so long as they played by a few simple rules, like don't take the money and try to coerce people into becoming religious if they don't want to be a part of your religion, but your church happens to be the place where the food is served, respect the fact that you're not using government money to convert them. The Bush administration didn't care that much about that little problem and pretty much said, do anything you want. They also said the faith-based initiative was going to give money to groups that were better at serving the poor than secular groups. Although a lot of people said that, even the very first director of the Bush Office of Faith-Based Initiatives eventually admitted that there was no data to support that idea. No data to support the idea that housing or food distribution or anything else is done any better by these religious groups. And the worst part of the Bush administration's plan may well have been that once government tax dollars, all of our money, goes to these religious groups, they can hire to feed the hungry or shelter the homeless only people, if they choose, only people of their own religion. In other words, to discriminate against anybody who's not as religious and in the same way as the recipient group. That was an outrage to the civil rights principles of the country and to the Constitution. Candidate Barack Obama said, oh yeah, it's terrible, we're going to change that. To this day, he has done zero to change that. And in many ways, his plan, his faith-based office, is operating in the same miserable fashion that the Bush one did.
Wow. Well, sadly, that kind of answers my next question, which was going to be, I know that your organization has been involved in a lot of, maybe not a lot, but some lawsuits against those faith-based initiatives. And I was wondering if there have been any changes made as a result of your litigation.
Well, I also was a consultant to a working group in the White House on this issue, and they took a few, not literally meaningless steps, but ones that in the event that they ever get implemented might make some difference. For example, let's say you go into a facility, and this has literally happened out in Boise, Idaho. You said, I need a bed. It's cold. It's minus five. I got to have a place. And they'd say, well, first of all, you got to pray with us. And then we'll give you food, and then maybe we'll ask you to pray again, and then if you pray again, you have a bed. Well, this cannot happen in America. You cannot force people to be religious. Now, some of those things have in this administration, they've been looked at a little more carefully. But frankly, a lot of the big issues have not gone away. I testified before the House Judiciary Committee late last year, when the Democrats were still in control over there. And so many of those members were themselves embarrassed that a president, who among other things had been a constitutional law professor, hadn't changed some of the fundamentally wrong things about giving money to a religious group and then saying, hey, you can hire whoever you want. Hire the people that are just like you. You know, we heard all that before. Remember how people used to say, well, you know, white people and black people, they ought to be separated because we're more comfortable that way. Well, comfort level is not a constitutional standard. We heard the same thing about women getting jobs. And frankly, it's all nonsense. And this president really needed to step in and still needs to step in to change this principle.
Right. Barry, how do you have an idea of an estimate of how many of our tax dollars are going into those faith-based initiatives?
You know, a major newspaper tried to answer that question, did a huge database, and was not able to answer the question. I can't either, because much of this is hidden in block grant programs and hidden in housing vouchers and other things. And some of this money is really being used without a religious bias. Unfortunately, the ones that are doing the bad things that I've been describing are not called on the carpet by anybody. There's no monitoring. There's no inspection. There's no records because, frankly, some of these church organizations just commingle the money they get from government with money they get from the collection plate, and it's essentially impossible to audit what they're doing. Another modest change that I had suggested to the administration, which they chose not to take.
So one of these faith-based initiatives, let's say that there's a church operating in the inner city and somebody comes there to get food, but if they happen to be gay or some other issue that is against the religion of the organization providing the food, then they could be turned away and they might be being funded by our tax dollars. Is that right?
Yeah, in theory, they're not supposed to be turned away as a recipient of the funds. But again, without monitoring, it's very difficult, and we get complaints about this all the time. Members of the GLBT community who aren't getting served, who don't get a home in a homeless shelter just because of their sexual orientation. Now, in theory, the Obama administration wants to stop that, but again, without oversight, it's pretty hard to stop it. If that same person came in, and we've been representing a woman in Kentucky for over a decade, a lesbian who worked at a Baptist children's home, she disclosed at the time that she was hired that she was a lesbian. However, many years later, they decided that that was terrible. Why, you couldn't possibly work with children there? And a Baptist home down in Kentucky that was getting a huge amount of tax money decided to fire her. We've been representing her for over a decade in her fight to get some compensation for being denied a job that was paid for, among other things, with her own tax dollars as a Kentucky resident.
Right.
That's
so,
a disgrace.
Yeah, so a lot of the problem with this comes down to the hiring practices of these organizations that are able to claim faith-based status, but are discriminating against the very people that are providing tax dollars to their organization.
No, absolutely. That is the heart of the matter. You hit the nail on the head, and it's a nail that ought to be pulled out and should have been pulled out by this administration a long time ago. But they have dawdled around about this. And, you know, when you think about it, this is a basic civil rights principle. If you get money from the government, you can't discriminate on the basis of race and gender and religion. We've known that since the days of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. But now, sadly, even this president doesn't seem to want to implement that clear civil rights standard.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of switching subjects, but I wonder what your position is on people who just think that the government goes too far in banning things that on their appearance they seem really benign and harmless, like nativity scenes on the courthouse lawn or posting the Ten Commandments in the school cafeteria. Do you see any justification for ever allowing the display of religious symbols in what some would consider just a very, very simple and harmless way?
Yeah, unfortunately, although some people do say that, it's harmless. What can it hurt? Maybe it'll do some good. Usually what it does is something fairly insidious. It seems to connect the government of the United States or the state or the city council with a particular religion. In other words, if on the city council steps of a diverse community, and almost every American community is diverse now, if you put a nativity scene up at Christmas, the Christmas season for Christians, it kind of looks like the government has endorsed that religion and, in fact, makes a lot of people feel, if they're Jewish or Hindu or humanist, they walk past that and they say, it doesn't look like I belong here. It looks like this city has defined itself as a Christian one. When it comes to schools, we need to be even more sensitive. The Ten Commandments are not the basis for American law, although you hear that a lot from people like Glenn Beck and other, shall we say, disturbed individuals on television. Well, I mean, I wanted to be polite about it, but no, really, Glenn Beck, I think in other cultures he'd be relegated to the corner of some kind of a public park on Sundays between 1 and 3, and no one would listen to him. But unfortunately, in today's culture, he has a television show and has a real effect on people. But a lot of what he says is nonsense. When the Ten Commandments had nothing to do with the Bill of Rights, even though there are 10 commandments and 10 original amendments to the Constitution, nothing to do with it. We don't make it a crime to covet your neighbor's SUV, to say nothing of her husband or wife. You don't do that. We don't root the rules in that. We also need to come to terms with the fact that some people in this country, a growing number of people, do not believe there is a God. Other people believe there are multiple gods. That's why the Pledge of Allegiance itself, pledging allegiance to one nation under God, isn't even factually correct. We have such a diversity of opinion. We have about 20,000 non-believers in this country. We have, 20 million non-believers in this country. We have literally thousands of different religious movements in this country. The Ten Commandments is important to some, but not to all. Government shouldn't pick and choose. As my conservative friends say about economics, government should not pick and choose the winners and losers. Well, they have it partially right there. They have it completely right if they'd understand government shouldn't be picking and choosing the winners in religion.
Well, I think what always kind of impresses me about the people who are able to claim they should have the right to do these things, to put the nativity scene out on the courthouse lawn, or post the Ten Commandments in the cafeteria, somehow are able to turn this issue around to the government keeping them from their own religious freedom to express what they believe. And I agree with you, most communities in America are diverse. I mean, this is a country, we're a melting pot. But there are those people who would say, well, what about in this neighborhood where every single person belongs to the same church? We all go to the same church. We all, our kids are learning the same religious principles. And the government is coming in and saying, you can't put the Ten Commandments up in the cafeteria. So what do you say to these people who say, well, the government is actually the one that is encroaching on our rights?
Yeah, I mean, I hear that a lot, but of course it's fundamentally false. The first thing to remind people of is that if you put up all Christian symbols in your school because everybody's a Christian, it kind of discourages the Muslim family from ever moving into that community. It's a de facto you're not welcome sign. And above and beyond that, and we've done some surveys. We have a chapter in San Diego, for example. There was a big fuss over putting a nativity scene up on a county property. They went around, the members went around, found out how many nativity scenes there were on church lawns. Only one out of three churches even put up one on their own lawn. Some of them were the same people fighting to get it on government property. No, right. I mean, it's hypocritical. Nobody stops. You know, our neighborhood that I live in is pretty diverse in every way, but if somebody puts up, we have a Hindu family, and they put up something, nobody objects to that. When somebody puts up a Christmas tree or a nativity scene in my neighborhood, nobody objects to that. It's your property. But the public property, the public parks and the public stairs, steps of the city hall are really open to everybody. Now, some people have decided, some cities have said, look, we're going to put up everybody's symbol. We're going to put up a nativity scene. You want a menorah there. You want, in some cases, atheists put up signs that say, like, Christmas is fiction, that kind of. But then that is a solution, and many courts have approved such a solution, but I think, frankly, it's a dopey solution. You end up with so many signs and so many symbols on the steps of the courthouse, you can't even get inside, you know, to walk through the mess in order to pay your parking ticket, which ought to be, as a practical matter, one of the other, you know, 85 reasons why it's a bad idea.
Right, right. I want to ask you just a little bit, Barry, about something I noticed on your website, and that is the way that many churches use the pulpit to preach politics instead of religion. And according to the IRS, tax-exempt status of a church is at least in part contingent on that church refraining from engaging in political campaigning, either endorsing candidates or condemning politicians whose policies they don't like. We've seen Catholic bishops openly state that politicians who support abortion rights shouldn't receive communion. So
right.
Does Americans United for Separation of Church and State see this kind of politicization of the pulpit as a serious problem? Is the IRS afraid to go after churches who violate that rule?
Well, it is a serious problem, and the IRS for a long time was starting to take this very, very seriously. And I think common sense, again, kicked in a lot of these churches. Nobody, by the way, is saying that a church cannot take a moral position on an issue. In other words, if they want to say, look, abortion is bad, or they want to say being pro-choice is good, nobody's stopping anybody from saying that.
Right.
What we do want to prevent are the people who go even one step beyond the description you just gave of many Catholic bishops, which is an accurate description. They don't just say you can't get communion. They might stand up or write in their archdiocesan newspaper, vote for Joe Schmo because he's the Senate candidate who will stop abortion. In other words, they get very partisan about it. They take out ads in newspapers. We found a church in Pennsylvania a couple of years ago that said, we'll take you to the polling place. You come to the church, we'll take you. But they asked what party you were going to vote for before they allowed you on the bus. See, this is partisanship. That's what the IRS needed to crack down on. They were starting to. Then there's a very technical, I do not want your listeners to go into a coma here, so I won't describe it in detail, but a technical violation, allegedly, of a regulation that has put all of these investigations on hold for about the last year and a half, and I expect they're going to reopen them. This thing will be resolved and it'll be reopened in the spring. By the way, it's not all Republicans. I don't want people to think it's only Republicans that make these problems. There are Democratic candidates, including, I have to say, Mrs. Obama, who just a few weeks before the election went to a gigantic North Carolina, which is a key state, North Carolina Baptist Convention, was invited to speak and just did a big campaign ad for her husband. So right. I do want people to understand it's wrong for the goose and the gander, wrong for Republicans and Democrats. We don't need to use the resources of the church or the power of the pulpit to get into partisan hack politics. We got enough groups involved in that now.
Right. But so, again, I'm just curious, why is the IRS not going after these people?
Well, technically now they can't because the wrong person signed some of the investigative files. And this has bollocked up the whole process for the last year and a half or more. I don't think they're afraid of it. I think that they want to do what we want to do, that is get voluntary compliance. We know that our efforts to complain and raise the visibility of this issue have led to a lot of churches just saying, you know, we're not going to do that. That's not what this church is about. Most people go to church because they want spiritual advice. If they want political advice, they can watch Ed Schultz or they can watch Glenn Beck. I can't imagine why you'd watch the latter, but they could listen to those people and get their political advice, but don't get it from the pastor whose job and whose tax exemption is based, they all agree to this, on not getting involved in partisan politics.
Right, right. Well, along those lines, I wanted to address the recent debate about an American citizen who happened to be a Muslim wanting to build a community center that would have included an Islamic prayer room just within a few blocks of the site of the 9/11 attack in New York City. And despite the fact that the man is an American citizen, the legal owner of the property he wanted to build on, there were lots of people who thought the government should step in and somehow prevent him from putting up the building. So what are your thoughts on that? Did Americans United take any kind of official stand on that?
Oh, yes. I kind of lived on television during the last weeks of that debate because it was getting so complicated. And here was, I think, what the resolution is. You cannot use religion or the basis of the religion of the owner of the building or the people who are going to be there to determine whether it can go up. A mosque, it was in part a mosque. It was a community center. It was going to have and still probably will have multiple prayer rooms for people of other faiths if they want to visit the community center. It's going to have a swimming pool and all that. So it wasn't just a mosque. And it wasn't terribly close to Ground Zero either. You couldn't actually see this block from Ground Zero. It was in a neighborhood around it. And I guess that the people who were complaining about it hadn't bothered to do what CBS News did, which is to walk around the neighborhood and see what else is there. A strip club, a couple of off-track betting places, a couple of porno stores. But no, they're not offended by that, or they might be, but they didn't talk about it. They're only offended by this. Now, to make things more complicated, the governor of New York stepped in at one point and he said, well, look, maybe we should just pay the mosque not to build there. We'll give them money to help them build somewhere else. Well, that's not right either. Government shouldn't be in the business of trying to build churches, or in this case, a mosque, or buy your way out of problems by giving money to a religious group. So we are kind of equal opportunity kvetches over here. We don't want government to support religion, and we also don't want government to intercede to try to tell somebody they can't build a temple, they can't build a church, you know, within limits. I mean, churches and mosques have to abide by certain rules. For example, let's say you have a gigantic bell tower in your religious facility, and you're right in a commercial, in a residential area, it might be appropriate for the government to say, you know, you can't ring this at 1 o'clock in the morning and wake everybody up.
Right.
You might say that because you have a noise ordinance that covers everybody, including the guy who just pulled his vuvuzela out that he found that he put in the closet while watching the last World Cup game. So as long as you treat everybody the same, you might be able to regulate that, but otherwise you just leave private property for private use, including religious use, whether it's majority or minority.
Right. And so as long as the basis has to do with just the practical issue of people being able to have a peaceful neighborhood, that's one thing. But when you turn it to religion and say, you know, this is a Muslim building, it's going to have prayer rooms, we don't like it, that doesn't work.
Exactly. Yeah, because governments, again, not to pick and choose, of course there's sensitivities about all of this, and plenty of politicians have managed to weigh in on this. Sarah Palin, who I don't know if she'd ever been there, but she certainly moaned about it all the time. But it was, I think, more for political gain. And I do think that so many of these issues, you're right, that it's politics, not religion, that drives it. That's not to say that average, ordinary people don't get upset about it, but a lot of this is driven by politicians who want anyone who believes in separation of church and state to be painted as if they're anti-God, they're anti-everything, they want to tear down the country. Remember Jerry Falwell said after 9/11 that feminists and gay people and the ACLU caused 9/11.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. There are always those that are going to take that approach.
Oh, sure, because it's a good, simple way to make a message. You get on television when you say it, and a lot of people go, yeah, I guess that's right, because they don't like people who are different from themselves.
Right. Well, you know, the Constitution prohibits government-sponsored religious activity, but what about the ways that religion has made its way into things like the Pledge of Allegiance and our currency? There are these areas where it's so deeply entrenched, where it's already there, that I wonder, does your organization believe it would be a waste of time to try to undo them? Or do you believe that, do you believe that any and all expressions of religion should be removed from currency, our Pledge of Allegiance, the Star Spangled Banner? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, being a wealthy person sitting here in Washington, I just pulled out a $5 bill, not a $1 bill, from my pocket, and it does say, "In God We Trust."
Right.
Now, that's a couple of points about it. We have never filed a lawsuit about it. Other people have, by the way. They've all lost. And here's why they lose. Because people say, about this at least, well, it's been on the coins and for a long time, although they don't really know. It wasn't originally on our coins or our bills. It wasn't until after the Civil War when we instituted a 2-cent piece, not too popular since we don't have them anymore, but it was the first one where Congress said, yeah, we're going to mint a 2-cent piece, put "In God We Trust" on it. Then gradually, during the 1950s, when we wanted to prove that we were different from the atheists and communists, Russia, we started adding this to everything, and in the mid-50s, we added "In God We Trust" to all coins and all bills, as well as adding it to the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, we didn't have "In God We Trust," or we didn't have the phrase, "Under God," in the Pledge of Allegiance through the First World War, the Second World War. It was written by a Baptist minister who didn't include that reference to God because he wanted it to be more inclusive. So somehow we managed to win two world wars without having "Under God" in the pledge. And these bills that say "In God We Trust," "In God We Trust" is not a magic phrase. I'm a minister in the United Church of Christ as well as a lawyer. This is not magic, though. These are the same bills you use if you want to pay off a corrupt politician. They're the same bills you use to pay for that drink, extra one you probably shouldn't have at the bar, the same one you pay, you know, for the hooker. It doesn't make us pure because it's close to these words. If being close to holy words made us perfect people, the fact that the Gideons have all those Bibles in the motel rooms would have ended adultery by now, but that hasn't happened either.
Right, hotel rooms where a lot of you know, let's face it, prostitution takes place.
Well, yeah, or perhaps a mere assignation, but it would be, you know, morally not something that you find too often benefited or promoted in the Bible.
So, right. Do you think a church can be used as a polling place without violating the Constitution? Because a lot of them are. I vote at a church.
Yes, I know that, and I'll tell you, there have been very, very little litigation about this, but if you or any of your listeners ever come across this fact pattern, we'd like to hear about it. In general, they're getting away with doing it in a polling place. Now some churches, though, have decided that on the way from the door into whatever room is the polling place, they're going to put up signs, or signs like vote pro-life, meaning vote for any candidate who wants to ban all abortions.
Right.
If we could find a church where they were going even a step further and mentioning who you ought to vote for and then just say, oh, it's just our bulletin board, we just had it up, I'd love to litigate a case like that because I think we'd win and I think we would start to send a strong message that we ought to find alternative places. In some parts of the country, frankly, there people vote in churches. Even though there are schools nearby, like a junior college, for example, or community college, I just wonder sometimes whether they're hoping that people will find it, shall we say, just a little easier to go if they're a little older voter to the church, and the younger people who might be on the campus to begin with, maybe some communities, they don't want those younger people to vote, at least not vote in such a high percentage that it actually affects the outcome of the election. So these are insidious often. Even when they're not, they're inappropriate, and people in local communities ought to work very hard to find alternatives to churches. If you find a church that also is telling you to vote for in that path from the door to the polling place, I'd love to hear about it. And anybody can just go to www.au.org and file a complaint about that or any other violations of the law that they see, and one of our lawyers will investigate it.
Well, Barry, how many lawsuits, how much litigation? I know you all have filed a lot of litigation on behalf of religious freedom, but can you give me an idea what are some of the landmark cases that you have prevailed in?
Yeah, some of the biggest recent cases, one I'm very proud of, we didn't even have to go to court ultimately because the Department of Justice and the Bush administration gave up. This was where widows whose husbands had been killed both in Vietnam, in Korea, and in the Iraq war, and in Afghanistan as well, were denied the right to put a religious symbol, a pentacle, on their husbands' grave markers in Veterans Administration cemeteries. Even atheists had a symbol, but Wiccans, pagans, could not put those markers up. And we had to sue the Veterans Administration, and it all boiled down to this. We found this out in the email trail that we eventually got from the government. George Bush didn't like witches. He heard about those Wiccans, those pagans, and down in Texas when he was governor. He didn't think they were legitimate. He didn't want us to help them. He didn't even want them to be allowed to meet on Air Force bases down in Texas. So somebody in the Veterans Administration said, well, man, if the president, the commander-in-chief, doesn't like witches that much, we better deny them the right to put up those symbols in the VA cemeteries. To the credit of governors, including some very conservative ones like the one in Nevada, he said, I don't care what anybody says. If a person served his country, they can put any symbol they want representing their spiritual or philosophical beliefs. So we did win that case. We were about to go into court when the government just caved in. Another important case we won was in Iowa, a case involving a prison system that decided to take some of the model prisoners and move them into, well, less good parts of the prison and put the prisoners in the best part of the prison if they would agree to be in a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week religious indoctrination program run by Chuck Colson, who some of your listeners may remember as one of the many Watergate felons. He came to Jesus.
I remember that name, yeah.
Yep. Well, he came to Jesus, and now he's doing this, and that's fine that he came to Jesus. That's not my business. But what my business is to make sure that they weren't giving special preference to these prisoners who agreed to go through what amounts to a religious conversion program. During the trial in that case, we discovered, among other things, that one of the things that these religious prisoners got that nobody else got tell me if you think this is important, a key to your cell at night. So you could go out and I'll use the restroom. I mean, it was ridiculous. And we won that, and we won that on appeal also, and the other side decided not to appeal to the United States Supreme Court. We also were one of the three parties to the Dover, Pennsylvania intelligent design case. We're a very conservative judge. Ruled that teaching intelligent design or referring to it in a biology curriculum violated the Constitution. It promoted religion, he said, but it didn't promote science. Those are a couple of them.
Well, being Jackalope Radio is, you know, we're based here in the Kansas City area, and I don't know if you recall when Kansas elected their state school board that actually was able to get Kansas to allow the teaching of intelligent design alongside evolution. What happened is in the very next election, Kansans, to their credit, did kick out that person who was the driving force behind that. But
That was a wise. Yeah, I mean, Kansas had become a kind of laughing stock, the jokes on the late night shows. And this is something, though, that keeps popping up in a few places. But after that Dover, Pennsylvania decision, it was so clearly and well written as an opinion. It kind of took a lot of the fire out of this effort to really confuse young people and students about the facts of science, the nature of science, and try to displace science with religion. And, it's a problem. I mean, I was recently on CNN on Anderson Cooper with a fellow who wants the state of Kentucky to essentially help him subsidize a water park in Kentucky that's based around the theme of Noah's Ark. Now, if somebody wants to build a Noah's Ark water park or a Tom Sawyer one, that's not my business. You do what you want. It's America. But he's planning to get basically kickback rebate of sales taxes to help him build this. And he's a guy, he believes dinosaurs, he told me that night on the show, were on the Ark because dinosaurs and people lived in the same time, which is only true in the Flintstones. And that unicorns apparently lived on the Ark. Also, he didn't mention jackalopes, by the way, but next time I see him, I'll ask him.
Wow.
But, I mean, this is the kind of subsidy. It's subsidizing bad science. It's subsidizing religion. It has no business being paid for with tax dollars.
Yeah, but, however, I would have to say, if I could book a cruise on a ship that has unicorns and jackalopes, I'm going to be there.
Yeah, see, I was afraid you might say that. And, after the taping that show, a woman came in and said, you've crushed my girlhood dreams. And I said, well, my daughter was really fascinated by the movie The Last Unicorn. I'll tell her not to watch the show.
However, funding it with government dollars, that's a whole other issue. That's not a good thing.
Not a good thing at all. And it's just constant. You know, there are good people who have better, they're not purely crass political reasons for wanting this money, and they want to do work with it that's good. And as long as you do it in a purely secular way, you've been able to get money all these years. Nothing has changed. You could still do so. But if you want to mix religion with either politics or mix with religion with the delivery of social services, that is not permitted. We really do believe in America that you pay for whatever your conscience says you should do out of your own pocket, not by picking somebody else's pocket.
Right. Well, that just takes me to another question I have about religious freedom, which is same-sex marriage.
Yes.
And I looked at your website, and I know you all are very active in trying to promote the idea that people of the same sex should be allowed to get married.
Sure.
But there are those people who think that marriage between a man and a woman is just implied and inherent in the tradition of marriage. And so I wonder, do you see any legal justification for prohibiting same-sex marriage just based on the gender of the people involved that doesn't have to do with religion?
No, I mean, I wish I could even find somebody who honestly believed there was no religious basis for their opposition to same-sex marriage, but I think maybe I met one guy once, or he called into my own radio show once and tried to explain it, but this is all about religion. Because marriage, by the way, we're talking about civil marriage. I don't want to force a church to marry a gay couple any more than I want to force a synagogue to marry a Jewish Christian couple if the rabbi says, that's not my tradition. I want people within their own religious traditions to be able to do what they want. But when it comes to the state recognizing it, I think that we should treat same-sex marriage in the same way that we treat interracial marriage. That was forbidden in many states, including Virginia and Tennessee, until the 1970s, when a landmark Supreme Court case said the freedom to marry is so fundamental that you can't make distinctions based on race. And frankly, here in the 21st century, I think we ought to be saying the same thing, making the same constitutional argument about people of the same gender who choose to marry.
Right. I agree with you, but just playing devil's advocate, I think what I have heard from the other side is, you know, they believe this opens the door to, well, can you marry a dog? Can you marry a unicorn or a jackalope?
Yeah, well, I must say that you're the first and only, perhaps, person who will ever ask it in terms of marrying a jackalope. I'll have to think about that. But I have thought, I thought about the dogs. And a plural marriage, and what about that? Well, you know, the law, as the lawyer part of me knows, that the law is all about drawing lines. We've decided at this point in history, and in the tradition, two people, that's a marriage. Would we ever think about a third person? It's possible, but it doesn't require that we jump from same-sex marriage to marrying your, I'm glad you said dog instead of cat, because I'm much more of a dog kind of person, but I never thought of marrying one. So it's possible that some point in the future we might be more open to polygamous relationship. I doubt that. But now we have, in this country, a growing number, almost half of Americans, who don't see a problem with same-sex marriage because they realize if you're willing to accept the rights and responsibilities of this civil ceremony, that you ought to be entitled to do so. So I think the wave of the future is there will be same-sex marriage in almost all of the United States, I think, over the next few decades, not just by decisions of courts, which is how it happened in some places, but also by the will of the people, who are fed up with somebody on the religious right trying to regulate them. And as I leave you here, I just want your listeners to know that the folks on the so-called religious right, the people who really are pushing for an eradication of the idea of separation of church and state, are really people who want to regulate your life from the moment of conception until the moment of death, as they define it, and pretty much every minute in between. And they can call themselves conservative for that belief, but I'd call them the worst piece of the nanny state, people who don't believe we have the right or the ability to make our own moral choices and have decided the government ought to step in and make laws about who we can love, how we can do it, what books we can read, and how we deal with our own bodies and our own spirituality. Bad news. Religious right is not dead. It's not even asleep. It's coming back in the form of the Tea Party in part and in other ways. And I think we and your listeners ignore it at their peril, and the peril to the Constitution itself.
Okay, Barry, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and taking the time to talk with us. It's been very informative. I appreciate all of your insights. And for anyone who wants to get more information on Americans United for Separation of Church and State, go to www.au.org and find out more on many of the subjects we touched on today. Barry, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Anytime you want to chat again, I'll be happy to chat with you, the unicorns, the jackalopes, and chimeras around. I'll even talk to them.
Excellent. We may take you up on that, Barry. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, and that was our guest, Barry Lynn. with Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. Again, you can find that organization on the web at www.au.org. If you want to learn more about the work that they're doing to keep us protected from religious encroachment into government. Thank you all for joining me today. I thought this was a great discussion with somebody obviously very knowledgeable about this subject. And I hope you'll join us next week. I want to leave you with a quote, as I always do at the end of the show. And my quote today comes from the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. There we go. Straight, simple, and that's it.
There's a bright golden haze in the meadow. I peep out. There's a bright golden haze in the meadow. The cone is as high as an elephant's eye, and it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky. Well, I say, oh, what a beautiful morning. Yeah. Yes, what a wonderful day. Y'all look out there. I've got a beautiful feeling. Everything going my way. Y'all come on now. Oh, the cattle are standing like statues. The cattle are standing like statues. They don't turn their heads as they see me ride by. But a little brown maverick is winking her eyes. She said, oh, what a beautiful morning. Yeah. Well, what a wonderful day. I want y'all to know, no, I've got a beautiful feeling. I've got everything. And everything going my way today. Ain't going my way, my way. All right, y'all, do it to me now.
Don't Shoot the Messenger with your host, Kathy Wynn, a Jackalope Radio production.
All the sounds of the earth are like music. The sounds of the earth are like music. The breeze is as busy, it don't miss a tree. And a little old weeping willow is laughing at me. She said, oh, what a beautiful morning. Yes, what a wonderful day. Y'all, I got a beautiful feeling. I got everything. I got everything. I got everything. Woo! Everything's going my way.
I'm sorry.
But I got everything going my way, my way. Oh, baby. Oh, baby. I wanna thank you, little girl, going my way.